VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very significant term for the United States Supreme Court. Many critical issues that are before them. I mean, they've already heard oral arguments on a case that has the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade, another case dealing with the Texas heartbeat law. Last Friday, they heard cases pertaining to shot mandates. And next week, the guest we have on today with us will be delivering oral arguments before the court in a religious liberty case that is known as Shurtleff versus City of Boston. With us today, Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt is a constitutional attorney with over 300 published legal opinions. He has authored 8 scholarly law review publications and some 10 books. He has filed numerous briefs and argued in many federal and state courts, including 2 landmark cases already before the U.S. Supreme Court. Back with us here today, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Matt, just before we talk about what's on the docket for next week as you appear before the court, I'd like to get your reaction to last Friday's oral arguments pertaining to the shot mandates. You were with us last Monday on Crosstalk as we anticipated the case. It has now taken place. The oral arguments have been given. Give us your reaction.
Well, the reaction is somewhat disappointing in terms of the knowledge of some of the justices with regards to the COVID shots, the workplace, and what is happening out there in the real world. Because you even had PolitiFact fact-checking Justice Sotomayor. You even had, for example, the head of the CDC coming out and disagreeing with Justice Sotomayor's statement regarding 100,000 children that are in serious condition, which is completely false. And other statements that were made seem to show a complete misunderstanding or misinformation with regards to the reality of what's happening with these COVID shots and in the workplace in general. But with regards to the OSHA mandate, it appears that there's a majority of the justices that are willing to block that mandate. That's how I read it. With respect to the mandate on healthcare workers that are recipients of Medicaid and Medicare funds, it's unclear which way the court is going, and it may well be that the court would uphold that for now. I don't know, but that one wasn't as clear to call as the OSHA one. I think there's a majority, perhaps even 6 justices on that particular side of the situation to block the OSHA mandate.
Now, Matt, you mentioned Justice Sotomayor, and the Washington Post even issued 4 Pinocchios for her statements. In that, justices are trying to get at the facts and cases to make a just decision. The fact that she herself was making erroneous statements by, you know, from what we heard from the CDC and Washington Post and others, many are saying that's ringing alarm bells here.
That rings a lot of alarm bells because you should have had more command of the information, and certainly the law clerks for any of these justices, they're doing research as well and should have talking points that they could provide to the justices. But to get at that far off base is something that's quite concerning because those kinds of comments can ultimately affect people's decisions. For example, these statements by the justices were not typical in terms of, you know, just a small number of people hearing them. A lot of people heard them because of the notoriety and the interest of these cases. So they were heard by a lot of people. Moreover, those kinds of statements can appear in their written opinions, whether in a majority opinion or in a dissent. And then the lower courts rely upon those, whether they're factual or not. Sometimes it guides the courts in the wrong way if it's not based upon facts. And what we find in some of the questions and the comments and the opinions that came out of some of the justices' comments is that they were so far removed from reality and so off base that it was literally disheartening and stunning that justices would be that wrong. Even not knowing what goes on in the regular workplace environment, there was a comment by one justice about how virtually everyone was shut down during COVID. But the court should know that that's not the case, mm-hmm. because all of these church litigation cases, including our cases, went before the United States Supreme Court. And time and again, we listed, and even the court reiterated, all the different businesses that were exempt from a lot of these COVID restrictions and that were working, whereas churches were being locked down and restricted. So they knew the broad number of categories of employment that were essentially unaffected by these shutdowns and restrictions that were otherwise imposed on churches. And yet, one of the comments by one of the justices is that very, very few were actually open. Well, that's just not the case. That's not reality. And they should know that based upon the past litigation on the churches.
Any idea when to anticipate a decision from the court?
I think we'll have something this week from the court. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be the end of the day for this. I don't think it's going to be the last challenge at all. Certainly on the OSHA one, it may be, but on the healthcare provider provision, no. You know, even the question that where are all the hospitals and that the hospitals are all in favor of this, I think that was an erroneous question as well. I don't think the hospitals are all in favor of it. Some of them are, certainly. Mm-hmm. But some of them are afraid to take this on publicly because they know that if they lose, perhaps they could still get moved around, jacked around by the government, and lose a lot of money from the Medicaid, Medicare funding.
Matt Staver with us here today. Matt, on a somewhat related issue, you're involved in a case that also may end up before the nation's highest court, Navy SEAL 1 versus Biden. A federal judge has ordered a detailed report from the military branches pertaining to religious exemptions. We understand over 21,000 exemption requests have been filed. What did we learn last Friday on this case?
Well, we learned what we anticipated, and that is they're not granting any religious exemptions. You know, we had the first report given to the court back on November 12, and they had about 16,643 that were submitted. They were, none of those were granted. One of those had been denied at the appeal level. Now the numbers have actually increased, but no religious exemptions are being granted, and we have more and more denied at the appeal level. So that means the only thing left is the discipline, which means separation and the punishment phase for these particular men and women in the military. So that's not going to look good for the military. We're going back into court this week. We're going to file some a renewed motion for an injunction because based upon this new filing, it doesn't look very good for this administration and the Department of Defense. We said originally that this is a ruse, that they're just saying you've got a religious exemption option, but they're not going to give it to you. The judge said that that was a plausible argument, but he wanted to wait and see if, in fact, more information would support that argument, and that's, in fact, what we have seen as of last Friday. Every 2 weeks now, the military has to give these detailed reports, but now we have a very strong basis to get an injunction.
Yeah, I mean, over 21,000 exemption requests, and not a single one has been granted. And I know, Matt, this is causing a lot of devastation for military personnel.
Yeah.
I see one even committed suicide over this issue.
Yeah, one, and you know, that makes me angry because I believe we had enough information and the judge should have given the injunction in November. And if that's the case, I think this young Marine would still be alive. But what we now know is some of the people that we represent, they were called in for counseling. They were surprised what the counseling was about. They learned that one of their platoon mates had committed suicide over the pressure to get these shots and the pressure that if he didn't get the shots, he would be separated from the Marines. And he took his life. And that occurred in December. That's something we cannot undo. But that's one that we have direct knowledge of from people that we represent. We warned the court in November through affidavits from some of our military chaplains who said that the number of suicides were going to increase because of these abusive mandates and the pressure being put on the service members. And unfortunately, we now know that that has actually occurred. So these mandates need to come. They must come to an end. And we're going to desperately and urgently press the court to issue these injunctions now to give relief to our men and women in the armed services.
Friends, critical issues that are before the courts, and I trust that you are taking time to regularly pray for the courts in the U.S. Supreme Court, where several of these decisions are now pending. And speaking of which, Tuesday, January 18th, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, Matt, you're going to be presenting oral arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court, a case known as Shurtleff versus City of Boston. Tell us about the case.
Yeah, that will begin on 10 o'clock a week from tomorrow, and the court will ultimately take a case that has huge impact for religious viewpoint censorship. This is a case where we represent Hal Shurtleff, the founder of Camp Constitution, and Camp Constitution filed an application in September of 2017 to honor Constitution Week, which is a federally recognized day, Constitution Day, as well as Citizenship Day. It's a federally recognized day of celebration and honor, and wanted to do that in Boston in its public forums. Boston has a policy and a practice, and the policy specifically says that it has these, quote, public forums that are open to all applicants. That's their words. And for 12 years, they allowed people to have events, and as part of that event and part of their forums, they designated one of the flagpoles as a place of public forum where people could have an opportunity to temporarily raise the flag regarding their particular event. And they approved 284 of those over 12 years, not a single denial. And then in 2017, when they got Camp Constitution's flag request to fly during their one-hour event at the base of the flagpole, it was denied because of the word Christian. It was the Christian flag that they wanted to fly to recognize the Christian community of Boston and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with respect to the history and the founding of the Constitution and the founding fathers like John Adams and Samuel Adams. And it was the word Christian in the application, not the flag itself. Flag wasn't the problem. It was the word Christian in the application that was ultimately the basis for the censorship. In fact, the commissioner who denied this testified that had the flag been called anything else other than the word Christian, he would have approved it. So the flag itself he would have approved, but he did not want it to be called Christian flag. It could have been called the Camp Constitution flag, and it would have been fine. But a Christian flag, no. Right. So in other words, Boston has its public forums open for everybody, all viewpoints, except those of Christian viewpoints, and that's unconstitutional. So this will be a huge case that will set national precedent.
Now, Matt, just to backtrack over some things you said, you mentioned over 284 approvals so far?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 284 approvals as of 2017.
Okay.
With no denials. And then if you go to 2018, 50 approvals. They approved individual flags, an average of one a week. And in fact, one of these flags is the flag of Communist China that is submitted by the Communist Progressive Association. And that particular, Chinese Progressive Association, which supports Mao's revolution and the beginning of communism in China. Well, the very next week, there's another group that flies a flag of Taiwan in protest to that other private speech. And that is for pre-Mao. So you can't have this as government speech, pro-communist, anti-communist. This is clearly government property, and private speech is on that property as a public forum.
We're going to take a quick break here. Matt Staber with us here on Crosstalk. We're discussing a case that he'll be arguing before the court next week, Shurtleff versus City of Boston. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there ever interbreeding between species?
Indeed there is, Chris. To illustrate this, let's talk about dogs. We know that in domestic dogs, there are many different breeds, and some of them are very different, from Great Danes to Chihuahuas, but all of them are interfertile. They're all part of the same species. The Bible tells us that God created the various kinds, and the dog kind, no doubt, included the domestic dogs. But it evidently also included the wolf and the fox and the coyote, because all of them can interbreed. Now I find that even jackals have been interbred with domestic dogs. Jackals have a very acute sense of smell, and so breeding them with huskies produced a new dog, which are good sniffer dogs for use at airports. Once again, Chris, we see that the biblical creation story is the one that makes sense, and that's the Back to Genesis truth.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
Up until 2017, some 284 approvals for flags. Not one of them had been denied. But this one is known as a Christian flag. Sorry, we can't have that because they said that's government speech and we can't have that. Matt Staver is with us today from Liberty Council. Matt, as a matter of fact, the First Circuit Court of Appeals that said the flags were government speech. You were just talking about China and Taiwan here. You don't accept that argument, do you?
No, I don't. And in fact, here's the problem, and this is why this case has caught national attention, because this government speech doctrine that the Supreme Court has ultimately recently minted over the last number of short years could swallow up our free speech in the public forum. And that's what happened here. For 12 years, you had a public forum, in their words, not mine. That's what their policies say. It's a public forum, and that it's open to all applicants. So for 12 years, they allowed 284 applications to be approved, not a single denial, until they came to application 285, which was Camp Constitution. And they denied it solely because of the word Christian. They didn't want any Christian viewpoint represented in their public forum, even though it was open to all applicants, apparently not to Christian viewpoints. So then they ultimately changed course, and they said, well, this really isn't a public forum. All of these flags are our speech. Well, they can't be their speech for a couple of reasons. One, every year you have a private group that is pro Mao Zedong, who promoted the overthrow of China and ultimately killed millions and millions of people. And there's a group that raises that flag every year to celebrate communist China. Well, there's another group of Chinese people that live in Boston and Massachusetts that apply to raise the flag of Taiwan. These are people that are protesting communism, protesting the current People's Republic of China. And those are the people that want to return to the pre-Mao revolution. You can't have that as government speech. One week where the government is speaking pro-communist China, and the next week it's speaking anti-communist China. One week it's celebrating the overthrow of by Mao Zedong, and the other week it's denying and denigrating the overthrow by Mao Zedong. That is classic private speech in a public forum. And so what ultimately we're seeing here is, if we ultimately lose this case, what it means is that the government can open up a forum for private speech, but when it gets a disfavored view, like a Christian viewpoint, it can just simply close the forum and say, oh, Christians are not allowed here. That's exactly what happened in this case. And they could say, well, because all of this is really our speech, it's really what we approve, when in reality it's not. And so that's why this case has caught the attention of the United States and the Solicitor General of the United States, including 12 states that have filed an amicus brief in our favor, and then 9 states, actually, and the District of Columbia that filed an amicus brief in opposition to us. So there are different states on different sides of this issue, and you can guess whether they're red or blue, whether they're conservative or liberal. That kind of tells you which way they're pending in this particular case. But it's a big case that will have huge national import across the country. If we lose, like I said, take, for example, Good News Clubs, after-school programs, Fellowship of Christian Athletes Clubs, for example. When the school opens up these forms for these after-school clubs, and then all different kinds of student groups use it, or different organizations use it after school. Now they get a Good News Club application, and they could say, oh, sorry, we're not going to allow that because that is government speech. We don't want any Christian viewpoints in this public forum. So therefore, sorry, you can't have access. And that would literally close a lot of these opportunities for after-school programs and use of a library, common community rooms, and so forth, to people with Christian viewpoints.
Matt, did you not argue the CEF case?
We did. We've argued a number of CEF cases. I didn't argue the CEF case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court in 2001. We filed a brief in that case. But I've argued a lot of CEF cases and have won every single one at the highest level of the courts that we've argued before. But all those cases could be in jeopardy if the court goes the wrong way.
And I'm confident you're going to be pointing that out as well. Matt, we had talked about, China and Taiwan, and somebody said, well, these are, political entities or, countries and so forth. What about religious symbolism? Have any of the flags that have gone up on the Boston flagpole, some 284 approvals, have any of them had religious symbolism?
Yeah, in fact, you have the Bunker Hill flag, which is an identical flag to the Christian flag. The only difference is it's got a reverse color scheme. Instead of being white with a blue square and a red cross, it's blue with a white square and a red cross. And that celebrates the Battle of Bunker Hill. So it's exactly the same thing. And that one is allowed because it's not a, quote, Christian flag.
Hmm.
And, in fact, they said if that was called Christian, that would have been censored as well. It's only the Christian viewpoints. But you also have the flag of Turkey, and it has the Islamic star, of, the Islamic crescent. That is for the Islamic Republic. That's been allowed to fly because they say, oh, well, that's not religious. Even though it's got religious symbols, that's not religious. But if it's a Christian flag, if the word Christian is attached to anything, it really doesn't matter what the symbolism is. If the Christian viewpoint or word is attached to anything, that is a disqualifying factor under this practice that now Boston has imposed to censor Christian viewpoints.
Matt, in their promotion for applicants to fly flags on this poll, they say this: we want to create an environment in the city where everyone feels welcome. How ironic that this is the only one flag that they've denied.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Everyone feels welcome is what they say, and that's why they want to fly diverse viewpoints and diverse ideas to welcome all of the people in the community. But when you want to acknowledge the Christian community, you're not welcome. That's the problem. And if you look at, for example, John Adams, he's our first vice president and second president. He's the one that said our Constitution is made only for a religious and moral people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other.
Mm-hmm.
He drafted the Massachusetts Constitution, and he was a resident of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So was his cousin, Samuel Adams. Both of these were very influential in the early founding of America. So this is part of the community, not only historically, but currently, that was designed to be acknowledged and celebrated as part of this welcoming environment that they say they want to include in Boston because of this public forum. But obviously, it was the Christian community that was not welcome.
Is it true that they're only going to raise this for about 60 minutes?
Yeah, it's only about a. In fact, what would happen is at the they would be on the plaza below, and they had planned to have a few ministers speak and also some people dressed in costume with regards to the founding era. And Hal Shurtleff would talk about the Constitution. And that flag would be flying during that event when this private meeting group was going on down below, and it was only going to last about 1 hour, and it would be over with, and that's it. Then the other flag of the city of Boston goes right back up there on the flagpole. So, in this case, really, it's kind of interesting that it turned into a Supreme Court case, because
yes,
it could have been very simple, that they just approve it, 1 hour, and they're done, and they're on to other things. But no, they dug their heels in. And amazingly, not only did they dig their heels in, the lower courts got it wrong multiple times. We lost twice at the district court. And then when we appealed it and I argued it twice, we lost twice there, 3-0. And they ignored all the court's precedent on public forum and went directly to this idea that, well, it's the government speaking, and therefore they can censor what they want to. But that's not what they've done by their multiple years of practice, and that's not what they've done by their policies. In fact, in 2018, as I mentioned, you had 50 applications. You had 284 from 2005 to 2017. You had 50 alone in addition to that in 2018. None were censored. One of those was a flag for a credit union. Now, why would the government be speaking to promote a credit union,
right,
private credit union? This was a private credit union that was celebrating its own, credit union members. That wouldn't be government speech. All of that was permitted.
I understand you mentioned the number of states that have filed the amicus brief on in support of you, those against you as well. But you also have a very surprising group that normally doesn't side with Liberty Counsel that filed an amicus brief.
Yeah, the ACLU of Massachusetts actually filed an amicus brief in our support as well, and they agreed with us across the board that this is a public forum open to private speech, and when the city of Boston censored this particular application because of the word Christian, it violated the First Amendment. And so we have a wide variety of people that are supporting us, from the ACLU of Massachusetts to the United States Solicitor General to 12 different states to a number of other organizations as well.
Since this has already been denied in lower courts, Matt, I guess you kind of know what arguments are going to come against you. I'm sure you're prepping for those.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we started prepping with regards to the oral argument prep last Friday. I did one today. We have prep Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, several hours more prep this week. And then go into the weekend to just review and get ready for the argument. You know, the prep with regards to what we call moot courts is really going through practice arguments, asking all kinds of questions, and coming up with the answers that need to be addressed in the shortest amount of time possible. And they're really designed to try to prepare you for what may actually occur at the United States Supreme Court. This is standard practice that we do when we go before arguments. It's certainly standard practice that anybody does before they go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So aside from this being a government speech, is there another main tactic that they used in previous denials?
Well, the first tactic that they used was that it's an establishment of religion. If they were to allow the flag to go up, then they would be establishing religion because they say it's government speech. Then they kind of walked away, and they didn't push that as much, and they said, you know, well, the whole thing is really government speech, so we don't have to justify it for any reason. It's just our speech, and we can say what we want to when we want to. Well, the problem is they continued that policy and that practice all the way until the present. And, you know, the fact is, not only they haven't changed their policies, they still say it's a public forum open to all applicants. They haven't changed the way that they approve these applications. They still approve them with very little, if any, review. And they have a wide variety of flags that they approve. They also have other places where you can meet in their various public forum to meet. But it was the flagpole that they really took the issue with.
And one of the issues, Matt, that we need to get out as well is the implications of this, because you already mentioned things about the Good News Clubs, but this could affect school voucher programs, could it not? And many other, I mean, this could be very wide sweeping as to its application if the court denies your case.
Yeah, see, the thing about this case is it's very subtle, and for people to understand the importance of this case is, If the city of Boston can get away with this, then here's what other governments can do, whether it's vouchers or whether it's after-school programs, whatever it may be, whether it's use of some other common facility or place that's open to the public, is they can open up an opportunity for people to gather, whether it's after school or in a particular building or whatever it may be, in a band shell, whatever it may be. They can open up those opportunities for private individuals to gather and engage in free speech. And then when they get a disfavored viewpoint, like Christian viewpoint, they can just simply say, oops, sorry, this really isn't open for everybody, even though we say it is. It's our speech, so we're going to deny you. It's a subtle way of ultimately denying Christian viewpoints, but it would have a devastating impact.
Because it's got the word Christian in it. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY. James 4:14 poses this thought. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Have you ever stopped to consider where you will spend eternity? You may say, but I'm a good person. I care for my family. I feed the poor. I stand up for life and traditional values. While all of these things are good, they fall far short of God's standard. Every one of us has a sin issue that must be dealt with. Our sin separates us from God, and each of us deserves to be eternally removed from God in everlasting punishment. But out of God's great love, He sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to bear our sins, shed His blood, die on the cross, and rise again. He is the only way of salvation, and it's imperative for you to place your trust in Him. If you're wrestling with this issue, we'd like to send you a complimentary leaflet, Where Will You Spend Eternity? To receive a copy, just ask for it when you call us at 1-800-729-9829. 800-729-9829. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver is with us here today on the program. Next Tuesday, he is going to be arguing before the U.S. Supreme Court a religious liberty case, Shurtleff versus City of Boston. We're opening our phone lines. If you have a question on this case or a viewpoint on this case, or if you want to ask questions pertaining to the Supreme Court case last week on the shop mandates, or if you have a question about the military, the fact that so many members of the military have applied for exemptions, over 21,000 exemption requests, and they'll say, oh, yes, we've got religious exemptions, but guess what, folks? The military has not granted a single one. And if you have questions on that, pick up your phone, give us a call. These three issues here today on Crosstalk are number 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Critical issues that are before this case. Again, our number 800-733-9829. And Matt, I find it very interesting, again, on this Boston case. It's been in the court system. I mean, over four years ago, they applied for this, was turned down. And the date, you know, that they chose with the observance of Constitution Day. I mean, that's rather ironic. Yeah. That they would turn it down for such an occasion.
Yeah, you know, we actually had a situation. It's pretty ironic because we had a case, for example, regarding a common community room in West Allis, Wisconsin, some years ago that we won. And they denied the event to go in there, and the name of the room was the Constitution.
Yes,
Room.
Yes.
And in the room was the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. But here you have Camp Constitution, and what they do is they teach about the Constitution. They have camps for young people and others to teach about the Constitution. Wanted to hold an event in honor of Constitution Day, a federally recognized day, and Citizenship Day. And they also, as part of that, wanted to recognize the history and the community of the Christian community in Boston and Massachusetts. And interestingly, if you go back and look at some of the Supreme Court cases, the Church of the Holy Trinity case actually goes through various constitutions, including the Constitution of Massachusetts, to show that Massachusetts' constitution, like many others, echoed the refrain that this is a Christian nation. They talked about the Judeo-Christian heritage and history and the impact of Christianity in our country. That was the United States Supreme Court. And so when Camp Constitution wanted to do the same thing, it was denied, ironically, in the home, in the state of John Adams, no less, because of the word Christian. A single word in the application caused the denial.
Wow. Well, our lines are packed here, and we're going to get right to your calls. We're going to begin in West Allis, Wisconsin. Beth, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Well, this is for Matt. Matt, you know, I just have a question. I'm listening to you talk this morning and explain what was happening at the Supreme Court. My question to you is this. Is it normal for the Supreme Court judges to give their opinion about a case and what they know the facts to be about a case before they actually hear you present the case?
It's normal for them to make a statement about the case, but typically what happens is they're making an argument. They're asking a question based upon what's in the record, or they're asking a question, maybe it could be an adversarial question, trying to test the advocate and opposing a particular different argument to that advocate based upon what's in the record. And I emphasize what's in the record, what's presented before them. But in this particular case, some of them went way outside of what's in the record that was developed in the record below. Went way outside of that, and who knows where they got some of that information.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was completely false, and that is very, very unusual and frankly startling.
You know, I don't ever recall a case, Matt, in which a secular newspaper has given four Pinocchios to a justice.
I don't either. I don't know. I mean, even PolitiFact that ultimately came out, and even the CDC director came out and rebutted that information and said, you know, that's actually more like 3,500 children rather than than 100,000. And by the way, also said, you know, about 40% of those that are in the hospital, 40% of those are not in there because of COVID. They went into the hospital for some other reason, mm-hmm. and after they got there, they tested positive for COVID, but that's not the reason why they're there.
Well, it's like they dismissed your case before they even heard it. That's
yeah,
how
I mean, that's the problem, because you have to ask yourself the question, how can you get a fair, you know, resolution of a case like that when they have these biased opinions that have nothing to do with what's in the record and are completely contradicted by anything, including, like Jim said, never heard of newspapers coming out and giving Pinocchios to justices for statements that they've made.
Thank you, Beth. Let's go next to Dominique in Maquanago. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have a question, but first off, Matt, I have to say I love Hal and Mara shirtless. You're with good people, and they with you. I rejoice the Lord put you together, and I pray we see a great victory.
Thank you.
My question for you is about Friday SCOTUS cases, and I agree the justices seem to be completely submerged in the mainstream narrative. And I was wondering that day as I listened to it, too, I'm like, is there any way that Matt Staver can get them some information? Because I know you know some very, you know, important, crucial facts. But something very major to me personally that I notice is that you've done an eloquent job of portraying that the EUA is illegal to enforce. But there has never been a level one safety and efficacy study of how the COVID recovered will react to the vaccines, quote unquote vaccines. And
right.
The COVID recovered were purposely restricted from the safety and efficacy studies. So even
right.
if they offer the elusive Comirnaty shot, that is an EUA to a COVID recovered person. And the testing I also heard is EUA. So can you answer that? And also, was there something that gave you confidence that they would not allow OSHA to enforce?
Thank you, Dominique.
Yeah, Donna, I think that what gave me confidence on that they would not allow OSHA to enforce it is some of the questions and or statements. Again, these are based upon some of the arguments in the record by at least six of the justices. And that is what gave me confidence. With the new process that the Supreme Court has followed, all the justices now ask questions, whereas before some of the justices asked more questions than others, and now it's more balanced out. So you can kind of get an idea of some of the questions they have or maybe some of the direction they're going. And based upon the OSHA argument, I think you've got a tendency to strike it down. And the reason why is because it's so broad and it's not industry specific. And it covers 18 to 26-year-olds, and it covers, you know, 45 to 65-year-olds and so forth, and everybody in between with one size fits all. And it covers every industry, whether it's meatpacking or whether it's other industries that may have different risk. So I think they were very concerned, at least the majority of them, about that. But with respect to some of the information that they had in the record, Dr. Peter McCullough is a world-renowned expert with regards to COVID. He published the first peer-reviewed article with regards to COVID treatment, and that was going back into late December 2020, I believe, is when it was published. He filed an affidavit that was put in an amicus brief with the Supreme Court, and that would, if you would read it, it would give a completely different view compared to what some of these justices were saying during the oral argument. So there was some good information in the record, but it doesn't seem like it hit the right landing places for some of these justices. Maybe they didn't read it, or maybe they just discounted it. I don't know.
Philip is calling from Richland, Washington. Philip, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Philip Gorton. I'm calling from Richland, Washington. I'm planning, I have an appointment to go before the school board and ask and try to convince them that they need Christian help in order to solve the problems. And I've given them the information that they can call the Riverview Baptist Church in Pasco, Washington. And the pastor there, I've talked to him about that. They're praying for us right now.
Go ahead, Philip.
Yes. And what I'm trying to do is to help them, and from a Christian perspective.
Yeah,
and if this law does not get put down...
Philip, you're very... Philip, hello, Philip. Talk right into your phone. You're very muffled. We're trying to get to, right to the heart of your question. What is that question?
The question is, how do I proceed with my attempt to help the Richland School Board get help in how they deal with their children and their program, what they teach the children.
Okay.
And that help is to have them see, talk with Riverview Baptist Church, which has a school program.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, how can you get them to help? How can you get the help to them? Well, I think obviously one way would be to go to the school board and present information. And there's a lot of Christian mothers that are now getting activated,
yes,
because of these mask issues, that they're tired of their kids being masked up all day. And there's a movement that's happening around the country of more involvement at the school board level. And I would tap into some of those local groups for some additional help and resources.
Matter of fact, just last week on January 4th, we had with us Tom DeWeese from American Policy Center there, and our topic was the kitchen militia, and that is getting getting moms out and involved in this. And I would encourage you, go back, go to crosstalkamerica.com, Philip, listen to our program last week with Tom DeWeese on the kitchen militia, and I think you'll find some good resources there. Thank you for the call. David is calling from Walnut Creek, Ohio. David, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air. Hello, David. David. Okay, we're going to put David on hold. We'll try and come back to him. Don't listen to your radio. You must listen to the telephone. Ron in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Ron.
Ron.
Hello.
You're on the air. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Matt, for what you're doing. God bless you. I thought I heard you say that there's six Supreme Court justices that seem to be going in favor of putting down the OSHA vaccine mandate. My question is, if that takes place, would that also include employers that have over 100 employees, that mandate would be shut down too? Because I'm not going to take any vaccine, and I'm not going to take any of those tests because I don't trust those tests, COVID test, because I heard that 97%.
Okay, let's have Matt answer your question.
The answer to that is that's what the OSHA mandate is about. The OSHA mandate is applicable to employers with 100 or more employees. It doesn't apply to anything else. There's three different mandates out there coming from Biden. There's the OSHA mandate on employers with 100 or more employees. That one was argued Friday. I think the court's going to block it. The other one is the mandate coming out of the Department of Health and Human Services, or the CMS mandate for Medicaid and Medicare. That's on your health care workers that in the entities that receive Medicaid and Medicare funding. I don't know which way the court's going to go on that. I'm more concerned about the direction. I think it was fairly obvious it's beyond the authority of HHS, but I'm not sure which way the courts are going to go. The third one that's not before the court yet, but will be at some point, and that's the federal contractors mandate. So in answer to your question, yes, this would cover the employers with 100 or more employees. However, that doesn't mean that just because this gets struck down, that all the employers that are 100 or more are going to stop their mandates. This removes the federal government from forcing them to do this mandate. It doesn't stop necessarily those individual employers from doing it on their own. So the battle may still have to be waged at some of these individual employers. But I know a number of them are doing it only because they're being forced to do so by OSHA.
Thank you, Ron, for the call. We're up against a 60-second break, and we'll be back with more of your phone calls. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. By the way, their website, lc.org, lc.org. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. The most prestigious law enforcement magazine in America is called Law Enforcement Today. Their website, lawenforcementtoday.com. Let me repeat, it is the most widely read and prestigious law enforcement publication in America. This is not some extremist website. It is read by the largest population of law enforcement officials in America. Today, their headline, Is Washington State looking to detain residents in 2022 version of internment camps? Sure looks that way. It's about legislation in Washington State looking to try to throw Americans into internment camps over not being vaccinated, or maybe even supposedly being infected with COVID, much like Australia and Austria. Law enforcement magazines are paying attention. Are you?
Friends, I trust you're going to commit to pray for Matt Staver as he argues before the case next Tuesday. And this case, Shurtleff versus City of Boston. We're going right back to the phone lines, and we're going to give David another try here out of Walnut Creek, Ohio. David, you're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to know, can't the states put a stop to these mandates, even the military? The soldiers in the military are from the states, and this is unconstitutional. Why can't the states put a stop to this mandate?
Great. Thank you, David.
Great. Well, in fact, Florida has put a stop to the mandates, and Florida has passed a law that you can't have these mandates in Florida, or at least you have to have, if you do, you got to have at least 5 opt-outs, which there's so many opt-out provisions that it's basically for any reason that you can opt out. So if you're going to do business in Florida, you're going to land your commercial aircraft, your passenger aircraft in Florida, you got to abide by Florida law. Florida, however, is the only state right now that's actually passed that kind of a broad law. There's other kinds of provisions that other states are working on or executive orders. But it wouldn't apply to the military, however, because that is federal. And you're talking about maybe the National Guard might be something different than, say, the United States Marines. We believe, however, that we'll get an injunction this month against all the branches of the military, at least on the basis of religious free exercise in the First Amendment of the Constitution. So that'll protect our men and women in the military. It's not a done deal yet, but I believe we're going to get that injunction this month.
Barbara is calling from Washington. Barbara, you're on the air.
Yes, your 60-second break addressed the topic that I wanted to talk about, and that was this coming Wednesday, the Washington State Board of Health will discuss applying current infectious disease WAC codes to include COVID-19 for all Washington State residents.
Barbara, talk right into the mouth. Barbara, we're losing you. Go talk right into the mouthpiece of your phone.
Okay. They want to allow local health officers to use law enforcement to force an emergency order to involuntarily detain any person to be isolated in a quarantine facility who refuse the vaccine or testing, et cetera. So I want to know if you've heard of that, what you know about it.
Thank you, Barbara.
We are hearing reports about that. We're monitoring it. It's also something similar coming up in other different places. Those are going to be clearly subject to a constitutional challenge. But, you know, I don't think we're out of the woods by any means. You know, we started in this road in 2020. They knew it was a lie when they said 2 weeks to flatten the curve. There's just no way. They knew that was a lie. But now that they've tasted the opportunity to control and how they can do it through these restrictions, they're not going to allow this to pass. And so consequently, this battle, I think, will continue on through 2022.
Yeah. And Matt, what you're saying is detention for refusing a vax, that is not constitutional.
That's unconstitutional. Detention for refusing a vax is unconstitutional under so many different constitutional provisions.
And I don't have the nation before me, but there's even a nation saying that even going to work is not a reason to go outside your house if you don't have the shot. And this tyranny is coming on so many different fronts. Let's go to Neshport, Ohio. We have Betsy calling. Betsy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a recently retired military member, and I have a question about those members that are currently in who've been denied their religious accommodation. Does Attorney Staver, do you have any information or guidance on should they voluntarily separate now? Should they stay and await a forcible discharge, how their benefits will be protected? Or can you point me to where we can
question.
Get information?
There are some that are trying to voluntarily separate by doing early retirement. They're being prohibited. They're being told you're not going to get early retirement. They're literally forcing them to make a decision to get this shot, and if they don't, they're not even allowing some of these men and women that are only a few months or 6 months away from retirement to process through to retirement. They're saying if you don't, you're never going to make it to retirement. So it's a really abusive situation, and that's why the pressure is so intense. And even, for example, in the Navy actually has a policy that says even if you were to get a religious exemption, which they've granted none, they've denied every one, but even if you were to get it, you're still considered medically disabled. In other words, you're not going to be deployable at all. And if you're not deployable, they're going to consider that a dereliction of duty. So it is really an untenable situation that our men and women in the military are under. It's unconscionable. And so we're moving quickly to go back to the court this week and ask for an injunction to protect all of the men and women in the military with all the branches.
Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. Jim from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Matt, for all you do. I just want to encourage everybody to support you. You do a great work.
Thank you.
Regarding the flag issue, I heard you talk about that earlier, and I've tried to contact my governor here in Wisconsin and say, if you can fly the rainbow flag the month of June, we should be able to fly the Christian flag. And I fly my Christian flag the whole month of June.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding the military, it's like, isn't it too late for a lot of these members already? They've either forced them or forced them out.
Well, unfortunately, it's too late for some. Like I mentioned, this man who committed suicide in December, and there's more that I don't know about, but I know they're out there happening. And there's also some that have already succumbed to the shot. In fact, we have one that was a leader of the platoon, and he succumbed to the pressure, and now he's dead because of the shot. He died of a heart attack 10 days after the shot. The military knows about this risk because it's part of a military study that came out in June of 2021. So for some of them, unfortunately, it is too late. For others, it's not too late. And so there's a lot of them that we're fighting for to make sure that it's not too late for them. What's happening is an unlawful order that originated from Biden to the Department of Defense and then being imposed on all these men and women who are brave military heroes, and that has to stop.
Thank you for the call, Jim. Squeeze one last call in. Gary, you're on the air.
Yeah, I got the question. Could the legislative and the executive branch overrule the Supreme Court?
No, not on... They could in certain situations, and they could, not the executive branch, but the legislature could change the law, for example, or the legislature could restrict certain kinds of things that go to the Supreme Court through the federal system. But it may still end up in the federal Supreme Court through the state system because they can't restrict what goes through the states. But what they can do is they can change the law. And clearly what they can do here is change the law with regards to restricting the power of the government, particularly with regards to COVID. I don't think that's going to happen until after the midterms with this particular group that's in the House, that's controlling the House.
Gary,
but midterm elections can make a big difference, and that can change the future of the country.
Thank you, Gary, for the call. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Their website, folks, specifics on the case next week, lc.org/flag. lc.org/flag. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
And folks, be praying for Matt as he argues before the court next week. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.